Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Tiger basketball, because the Tigers snapped a three-game losing streak Sunday at FedEx Forum. Beat UConn 78-71, so now they're 14-10 overall, 6-5 in the AAC. Up to 80th at KenPom, up to 68th in the net. Kevin Davenport scored a game-high 26 points. Tyler Harris got 12 off the bench. Memphis shot 48.2% from the field, 38.1% from three-point range, 88.9% from the free throw line. Just good numbers across the board. And, yes, I know UConn was shorthanded and is rebuilding under first-year coach Dan Hurley, similar to the way Memphis is having to rebuild under first-year coach Penny Hardaway. But in year one of Penny Hardaway, I think you just take wins over big brands however you can get them, whenever you can get them, and you apologize for nothing. And so Penny will take it, I'm certain. But more than anything, I think yesterday was a glimpse of what's to come. And not only for the Memphis basketball program, but for the Connecticut basketball program and for the American Athletic Conference in general. I really love this quote from UConn coach Dan Hurley after yesterday's game. Here's what he said. He said, "I said to Penny in the handshake line, I don't expect us with what we've got coming in and what we're going to build and what he's got coming in and what he's going to build, I don't expect us to come into these games 13-10 in the future." That was both teams' record yesterday entering the game. "Obviously, I think the programs are going to spike in terms of what we look like next time we meet on the court. It could look a little bit different, not in terms of necessarily the result, but in terms of what it looks like and in terms of what's at stake," end quote. And I thought it was important note that he made it clear. I'm not saying next time we play, we're going to beat Memphis. I'm just saying next time we play, we ain't going to be a 10-loss team and they ain't going to be a 10-loss team. Next time we play, we're going to have Memphis looking more like what Memphis needs to look like and Connecticut looking more like what Connecticut normally looks like. Because right now, Memphis and UConn both have top 20 classes on the way. Memphis is a little more heralded because it includes James Wiseman, the number one prospect in the class 2019, according to some recruiting services. But UConn's got a nice class as well. And that quote from Dan, I think, echoes what I've been saying for a while about the American Athletic Conference. And I'll get back to that in a moment. But first, pause. You guys got a treat out of Dan Hurley yesterday,
boy,
I imagine.
That guy can get after it.
So I was, like I said, sitting on an airplane on a runway waiting for somebody to de-ice us.
Oh, man.
And then like just sitting in an airport waiting for somebody to tell us we can get on a de-iced plane after they removed us from the plane after like 3 hours. So I'm watching the game on my phone and following it on Twitter. And, you know, every other tweet is like, Dan Hurley is a maniac. And to that, I would just say, yes, he is absolutely a maniac. Mark Giannotto pointed this out on Twitter, the fine columnist at the Commercial Appeal. Like, if you ever get to know Dan or get him away from really just the sideline, he's pretty thoughtful. I won't say quiet, but, like, he's not yelling all the time. He's a pretty, like, under-control guy. But something happens to him when he gets on the sideline. And Bobby Hurley, by the way, is just like him.
Yeah.
The Hurley brothers, we've got a handful of brothers like coaching in college basketball now. The Drew brothers, Scott and Bryce, the Miller brothers, Sean and Archie, the Hurley brothers, Dan and Bobby. And by far, we can rank the brother tandems in terms of ability. However you want. Yeah. Like, I think you can make reasonable arguments for any of them. But undeniably, the craziest brother tandem, that's Bobby and Dan. They're bananas.
They get after it.
He's not like that in real life. Yeah. Like, I've had 45-minute phone conversations with Dan Hurley, and you would never hang up the phone and then expect to see that guy on the sideline. But that's who he's been for a while. It's just now on a bigger stage because he's on a bigger stage. He's the UConn coach. He's now coaching at places like Memphis and Cincinnati and Houston and Wichita, as opposed to, you know, A-10 school. So new fan bases are exposed to this, and every time it can be jarring because you're watching a guy, like, legit lose his mind on the sideline. He's cussing at everybody and about everything. Yeah. He's just worked up nonstop. And it is one of the things I know, and like I find it entertaining. I do find it sometimes over the line a little, if only because I don't think that's the way I would be if I were a coach. I don't think I'd be a yeller and a screamer. I think all coaches need to have their moments. Otherwise, you know, you don't have officials on edge. Like if officials aren't scared, you might jump down them, or at least aware that you might jump down them. They might be a little more willing to make a block charge call go the other way. There really is an art to staying on officials to make sure it'll get you a call somewhere. And it could be a game deciding call. So I do think you have to sort of play the game of how coaches treat officials and talk to officials. But I do think Dan is obviously excessive. I find it entertaining for the same reasons everybody else does. But I also do find it over the line at times. It's always been weird to me the way, watch it next time you're at a game. You know, the team's coming, that, you know, the cheerleaders run out and they got the big flags and the teams come out and they're going through layup lines, whatever. We, you know, we're like 3-4 minutes from tip off or 3-4 minutes from the starting lineups, and the officials come out and the officials walk to both staffs and they shake, everybody shakes hands and it's like, hey, how you doing? How you kids? Good to see you again. And then you throw the ball up and it's like, F you, what are you watching? You stupid F you. Yeah. Like, it's just like, it goes from very cordial to like, you're talking to me in a way, from an official's perspective, you're talking to me in a way you wouldn't talk to another human being on this planet. 3 minutes ago, you asked me how my wife and children were doing. Like, what is wrong with you? But that's just sort of the way college basketball goes. So anyway, I do know this. There have been people who have talked to Dan in years past. Really, when he was at Rhode Island and got that thing going, and it was clear he was going to be he ain't going to retire at Rhode Island. That became clear pretty quickly. Like, is he going to be the Rutgers coach because he's got the New Jersey background, or is he going to, you know, wait for a big job like UConn? But he was always going to be something other than the Rhode Island coach. I think even Rhode Island fans and administration knew that. Mm-hmm. But I know it was something people had talked to Dan about, like, that might work for you, your sideline behavior, and it might get more out of kids. It might be effective with the officials. It's hurting you with athletic directors. There's not every athletic director will just say it's a non-starter, but there's some athletic director who will pop into one of your games or watch you at a conference tournament or watch you in the NCAA tournament or just get film on you, and they will watch this behavior and just say, I can't have that as a visual connected to my basketball program. So he has in recent years, toned it down. Matt Norlander, my colleague at CBS Sports, went to Rhode Island, I think last year, and did a nice story about Dan Hurley trying to just calm the F down a little bit. But clearly yesterday he had thrown that out the window.
Calling fans douches.
Yesterday was, if he has a pattern of calming down.
Yeah, that wasn't it.
He reverted yesterday to the old Dan Hurley. And my understanding is people sitting around the UConn bench were treated to quite something. I'll just leave it at that. Anyway, to go back to the league in general and Dan's quote about thinking these programs are going to look a lot different next time Memphis UConn play, assuming they don't play again this season. Undeniably, it's true, and it's tied to recruiting rankings. And like I said, it echoes something that I've said for a while about the American Athletic Conference, which is this thing can go from to, oh, man, it's really good.
Right.
And it's not even like you don't need a big imagination to figure it out. All you have to do is keep Cincinnati where Cincinnati is consistently under Mick Cronin, which is a top 30, 35 program, a program that got a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament last season. That's the high end. But for a long time now, Mick hasn't had a bad team. It's one of the reasons in the preseason I picked Cincinnati to win the league. And I might end up being wrong. It might just be Houston, right? Because Kelvin's done an amazing job.
They're close.
But they're close. Yeah. They're the second best team in the league. And when I would rank them in the top 25 and 1, which, by the way, they're still there this morning at 26. When I had them, I think at 26, maybe in the preseason or right around there, people would say, but you know they lost A, B, and C. And I'd say, yeah, they lost a lot. But, you know, Mick, he doesn't always lose a lot. But when he does lose a lot, it doesn't seem to matter. Mm-hmm. He has really got his fingerprints all over that program. And, you know, whether it's Sean Kilpatrick or Jaron Cumberland, like the guys just sort of, there's a new guy who looks exactly like the last guy every time since they had a season. And obviously, if you watch Memphis UC last week, you know it's Jaron Cumberland. He was terrific.
Yeah.
He took over the game in the final minutes. He's the reason Cincinnati won and Memphis lost. Cincinnati had a guy who could do that. Memphis didn't have a guy who could do that. So you just keep Cincinnati where it's been under Mick consistently. That's not a stretch. Just keep doing what you're doing. Nothing more. We don't need anything more out of you. Just be what you've been. You get Houston to just keep doing what it's doing under Kelvin. Nothing more. We need nothing more out of you. You don't have to go recruit better. You don't have to just keep doing what you're doing. And that's fine. 2 years in a row now. Top 25 team. Get Wichita State back to where it's been under Greg Marshall. And that might be a little more difficult because it's possible Greg just sort of caught something there with, you know, Fred VanVleet, Ron Baker, Landry Shamet all coming like back to back to back. Like, how often are you going to have three NBA guards at Wichita State? It's possible he just sort of like caught something there. But I will say, if you go back and look at Greg's track record dating all the way back to Wofford, he has been a consistent winner. And I don't see any reason that will change on a macro level. Maybe he never gets it back to where Wichita's ranked in the top 10 consistently. Wichita's going undefeated, getting a one seed in the tournament. Wichita's going to a Final Four. But can Wichita be a legitimate top 40 program consistently? Yeah, I think so. So then you got three. And then you just get Memphis back to being what Memphis needs to be. You get UConn back to being what UConn needs to be. And then you've got five. I think you could reasonably say you've got five top 50 programs in America. And if those if they can be five top 50 teams year in and year out, well, then guess what you're racking up every time you play, just about every time you play in your league?
Yeah, the quad one wins, yeah.
You're getting quad one wins. You're getting top 50 wins at home. Yeah. You're getting top 50 opportunities on the road. Like right now, I was in Nevada over the weekend, and if people want to ding them a little bit, even though they're sitting here at whatever and one, you know, it's that they don't have any top 40 KenPom wins. They do not have any wins over top 25 teams. Well, to just say it like that is to, ignore context. Nevada, it's literally been impossible for them to have a top 40 KenPom win or have a win over top 25 team. They scheduled aggressively in their non-league. They're playing their Mountain West schedule. The Mountain West schedule gives them no opportunities.
No.
Like I had somebody point out to me over the weekend, well, Nevada can't really be a top 10 team because they haven't beaten a top 25 team. If you gave the Golden State Warriors Nevada's schedule, guess how many wins right now they'd have over top 25 teams?
Zero.
Same amount.
Right.
Now, would you say, well, the Warriors can't be a top 10 team because they don't have a top 25 win? Well, if you know the Warriors are awesome, and I'm not comparing one to the two.
I got you.
But if you know the Warriors are awesome, and you also know the reason they don't have this thing that you want them to have is because it's literally impossible for them to get, then what are we talking about? Nevada can't be a top 10 team. Then you're just like, you're penalizing them because UNLV's not any good, or because New Mexico's not any good, or because San Diego State's not any good. Why would you penalize a team? Because the other teams in the league ain't doing their job. Like, Eric Musselman's job is not to make the Mountain West good. He can't recruit for UNLV or coach San Diego State. All Eric Musselman's job is to make Nevada as awesome as he can make it, and he's done that. So I reject the idea that, well, they can't be a top 10 team because they don't have top 25 wins. They can't get them in their league. It's not their fault. They scheduled aggressively. They scheduled Arizona State. They scheduled Utah. They scheduled Loyola Chicago coming off of a Final Four. They went on the road and played these games. They beat everybody's brains in. It's not their fault Loyola Chicago is not any good. It's not their fault USC has been injured and not any good. Not their fault Utah is not any good. Not their fault Arizona State until this past weekend has fallen off since it beat Kansas earlier in the season. And so I would say that these types of things have big impacts on leagues and on teams. If you're in a league, you need other teams to be quality, to give you quality opportunities. The rare exception maybe being Gonzaga, because it is now such a big basketball brand. Mark Few can go out and schedule whatever he needs to schedule. You know, Mark can like actually get a home and home with North Carolina. He can go to Maui. He can play neutral sites with Tennessee because Gonzaga is a big brand. TV recognizes it that way. They give them those opportunities. Nevada ain't quite there yet. And Memphis is probably, definitely, a bigger brand than Nevada, but still the point remains the same. It doesn't matter how good you might be with James Wiseman and DJ Jeffries and presumably Trendon Wofford and second-year players like Antoine Jones and Isaiah Maurice and Tyler Harris and Alex Lomax. If your league doesn't give you opportunities to get quality wins, people are going to try to ding you on that, unless you are just so awesome that you cannot be denied. That's like Memphis in 2006, Memphis in 2008, Gonzaga when It got a one seed in the tournament. Wichita State went, it got a one seed in the tournament. And so this is all good stuff for the league. I thought Dan really touched on something that's important. We're going to look different in a year. Memphis is going to look different in a year. And if you combine that with Cincinnati being what it needs to be, Houston continuing to be what it is, Wichita State getting back to what it needs to be, well, then you've got five high-level teams that should all be good more often than not, year in and year out. And then what that does is give everybody in the league plenty of opportunities to prove what you are. And then you know what else I think it does? Probably puts you in a conversation to be a top five league in America. Right now, the top seven are the Power Five leagues plus the Big East, then the American Athletic Conference. And it's always, or usually, the AAC is seventh of those seven. But there's no reason it can't bump ahead of the Pac-12. There's no reason it can't bump ahead of the Big East. I mean, the Big East has Villanova, Marquette,
yeah, sure.
Butler, Seton Hall, mm-hmm. St. John's, Creighton, Providence. Good programs. Xavier down right now, but good program. But you get those five programs I've mentioned, Memphis, UConn, Wichita, Houston, Cincinnati, all operating at the level that is reasonably possible for them. You've got an incredible basketball league, and I thought it was interesting that even in defeat, Dan Hurley sort of touched on that yesterday. We'll talk more about this with Jeff Calkins at 5 o'clock. When we come back, David Cobb, Grizzlies beat writer, commercial appeal. The return of Chandler Parsons is not too far away. We'll talk about that. Life after Marc Gasol. David Cobb coming up next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
This ain't a wave or a phase, cause all that fades. This lifestyle's forever when you made. They tweet about the length I made them wait. What the you expect when it got
Cooper Systems over in the Mount Moriah office park. It's on the web, coopersystems.com. You need a computer. New computer, refurbished computer, custom-built computer, high-end, low-end, middle-of-the-road, desktop, notebook, tablet, whatever you need. Cooper Systems, Lee and Lauren, Cooper, they either got it for you or they can get it for you or they can build it for you. It's why you need to avoid the big box stores. You go to those places, you just buy them whatever the brand new computer they got in a nice box is. And maybe that is perfect for you. I don't know. But odds are it's not, because it's going to have a whole bunch of programs that you're paying for that you're never going to use. Most of you, all you do is mess around on a computer, watch stuff on YouTube, stalk your ex on Facebook,
of course,
play around on Twitter. You're not using all these things. Like, if you're not making music videos, so you don't need the programs on your computer to make music videos. But if you buy the brand new thing from the big box stores, you're probably paying for it. At Cooper Systems, you're not going to. You tell Lee and Lauren what you're going to need for a computer, and they'll find one that's perfectly suited for you. If it's perfectly suited for you, it's going to be a better price for you. You're saving money. That's at Cooper Systems, 360-9679. 360-9679. They're on the web, coopersystems.com. The Memphis Express played its first game in the Alliance of American Football yesterday. It did not go well. They got blanked by Birmingham. Battle of the Bones goes to the bad guys. But they'll play again. Yeah. Next time we'll be at home. Maybe it's just home field advantage is a huge thing in the AAF. I don't know. Talk about that in the next segment. Jeff Cock will be here a little after 5 o'clock. But right now, David Cobb is your first year Grizzlies beat writer for the commercial appeal. He's on Twitter at David W. Cobb, making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM ESPN.
So, David, I only mentioned that you're a first-year Grizzlies beat writer to highlight exactly what you're dealing with as a first-year Grizzlies beat writer. It is one thing after another after another after another, and the latest is that Chandler Parsons will soon rejoin the Memphis Grizzlies. Is it your understanding that the league has leaned on the Grizzlies a little bit, especially after what happened with Anthony Davis in New Orleans, or is this just something the Grizzlies decided they wanted to do for whatever reason?
No, I've got no indication that this was anything that they were pressured to do by the league. I think it's something that benefits both sides. Parsons needs to prove that he can – play in the NBA still, and you know the Grizzlies need to prove that he has some value if they want to shed his contract. You know, and not to mention they could actually use what Chandler's skill set is. So, yeah, first year on the beat, man. The All-Star break. I'm glad it's getting here this week.
It'll be here soon enough. It is interesting then because you know Chris Wallace comes out late last week and. I don't think breaks news, but reiterates something that he had said previously, which is, yes, our goal is, you know, in the preseason, the goal was to make the playoffs, obviously. You know, even Robert Parra put it at 50 wins, as wild as that might have been. But the secondary goal was, okay, we don't make the playoffs. Let's get close enough to where we can convey the pick this year to Boston. So he announces that. And then, in theory, maybe Chandler Parsons can be something that helps you convey the pick. So let's say that the league didn't lean on them, that this is something they've decided to do. If Chandler Parsons can help you convey the pick now, in theory, he could have helped you convey the pick a few weeks ago. Does this make the decision to send him away in the first place even more, I don't know, questionable?
Well, I think there was at least a glimmer of hope that they would have traded him before they did. I know that there was a glimmer of hope on Parsons' side and with his agent that they were going to trade him before the deadline, as far-fetched as that may have seemed. Because just of the gross mathematical difficulties with it on the money side. But, you know, so I do think that there's a possibility that they were going to send him away with the hopes of getting that done. Obviously, that didn't happen. I don't know how practical it ever was to begin with. And when we talk about the conveying thing, when Wallace said that the other day, that's the first time that he has said that. I mean, unless he said it before I got here in November.
Yeah, let me say, I didn't hear it with my own ears, but Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian has said that in a conversation with Wallace in the preseason, Wallace said essentially the same thing. We'd like to convey the pick to Boston this year.
Well,
and that was obvious. That was before you got on the beat. So,
okay. Well, I mean, I just don't really buy that if they had traded Mike Conley, that would have still been a realistic goal,
right.
And they didn't make that decision until 15 minutes before the deadline.
Right.
So, I mean, who are they going to convey with if they had traded away Mike Conley? Were you going to try Ricky Rubio out there with a few Raptors castaways and Jaren Jackson Jr. and suddenly, you know, climb back towards 500?
Yeah, good luck.
No.
But anyway, yeah, Chandler theoretically could help. If nothing else, it just keeps the drama rolling, which at this point is the main thing that this season is good for. So, you know, honestly, it's the best thing for both sides. And you may be right. There may be some truth to the idea that maybe the league realized that if they were going to force the Pelicans to comply with the rules on Anthony Davis, that they needed to kind of make that the precedent around the league. And so, you know, maybe the Grizzlies are kind of being proactive in that regard by getting Chandler Parsons out there. But I do think the situation with Parsons was different, too, because it was sort of a mutual decision because, you know, there was the dispute over whether Chandler was going to go to the G League, and he didn't want to go to the G League. And so they gave him the option to stay with the team, and essentially he would have been a healthy scratch, or gave him the option to go back to Los Angeles. So in Chandler's case, he decided to go back to Los Angeles, and you know, even with him coming back now, I don't think that there's any guarantee of minutes. I know that was sort of implied in some of the reports, but, I mean, JB's got so much to sort through now with this assortment of new players that it's just going to be like almost like a new season with all these guys. So I don't know that there's any guarantee of minutes for him either, but I would guess he'll play some, and I think ultimately that's in the best for both parties.
Talking to David Cobb, he is the Commercial Appeals Grizzlies beat writer. He's on Twitter at David W. Cobb. I want to step away from the Grizzlies just for a second and ask you, just in general, your thoughts on the Anthony Davis situation, because one of the points I had made last week was that if Anthony Davis has already publicly, through his representation, asked for a trade, then the only thing he is to New Orleans going forward is an asset. He's no longer a part of anything. He is simply an asset. And so if they don't want to play him and it's not in their interest to play him because now you are trying to tank and you're trying to protect an asset, I don't think they should be forced to play him. Like, I think the NBA is wrong here. And Mark Stein made the point again this morning. It was essentially the same point I made last week, which is once if Anthony Davis is allowed to publicly ask for a trade, then the Pelicans should be allowed to then decide in a very public way, well, now we're going to deal with this situation in a way that is in our interest with no regard for anything else. I think it's just fundamentally wrong. I understand why the league is pushing them to play Anthony Davis because he's a star and you want your healthy stars playing. But I really do think the league has maybe overstepped itself a little bit here, overstepped its bounds, because clearly Anthony Davis is not a part of New Orleans' future. And what if they're forced to play him and he gets hurt? And suddenly the package that they had on the table from the Lakers, no longer there. The package they were going to have on the table from the Celtics, no longer there. I really think this is a complicated situation where I side with the Pelicans more than I do the NBA, I think.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised at how quickly the Pelicans bowed to the pressure from the NBA there. And not only have they resumed playing Anthony Davis, but they've resumed playing him extended minutes. And as we saw in Memphis on Saturday night, on the second night of a back-to-back, which is, you know, notable, I think, especially for a player who was already coming off of a finger injury that forced him to miss several games. So a little surprised at that, and I completely agree with you that it's in their best interest not to play him, and it's in the Grizzlies' best interest for the Pelicans not to play him either, because if the Grizzlies are going to convey this pick, the Pelicans are one of the teams that they need to pass in the standings. Well, if Anthony Davis is participating in basketball games for the Pelicans, they're accidentally going to win a few of them, in which case that makes the Grizzlies' uphill climb even more challenging. So it's dynamics that affect the Grizzlies here too, beyond just, you know, what precedent it could have with the Parsons situation. It could have a realistic impact on the Grizzlies' ability to convey this pick. So I'm a little surprised, given the protections that the NBA has gone, you know, that they've instituted to protect small market teams over the years, that, you know, in this situation they are choosing to, you know, adamantly enforce something that appears to have some gray area that would, you know, you would think give the Pelicans some leeway here.
Talking to David Cobb from The Commercial Appeal, the Grizzlies have won 3 of 4. Obviously, the roster looks very different now than it looked this time last week. Garrett Temple's no longer involved. Shelvin Mack's no longer involved. Jamichael Green's no longer involved. Most notably, Marc Gasol no longer involved. Do you think they can be good enough the rest of the season to actually put themselves in a position to convey the pick to Boston this year?
I give them a 25% chance of doing it. I mean, I don't think it's impossible. But the problem with it, Gary, is that if you go, you know, all out in pursuing this goal of conveying the pick, and then you come up just short, then you're going to be picking like 8th or 7th. And that's just a disaster, because at that point, you're picking a player that you don't really feel all that great about, and then you still have this obligation looming overhead the following season. So it's a little bit scary, and in that regard, I was actually surprised to hear Chris Wallace mention that so outwardly as a goal the other day, because what does it do? It sets it up for, you know, this stated goal, you know, if they don't make it, then it just sort of is more egg on their face since they came out and acknowledged it as the goal. So, you know, it's an admirable goal. I mean, I think most people could agree it's the right goal. But given the collection of players that J.B. Bickerstaff will now have to sort of figure out, I don't think it's a given. I mean, the schedule's easier. There's more off days in this back portion of the schedule. There'll be you'll run into teams at the end of the season who are resting players for playoff runs. I mean, there's a number of factors here that, you know, that make it practical, that make it doable, and keeping Mike Conley, I think, is critical to that goal. So I would give him a 1 in 4 chance of doing it. And if nothing else, I mean, it adds a little bit of intrigue. I don't think that conveying is going to, you know, sell out FedEx Forum, yeah, but it'll at least keep some fans interested in a season that's lost most of its luster.
Well, it speaks to, like, the bad situation that the franchise and by extension the fan base is in, that the goal, like, if things work out for you, it's like you don't pick in the 2019 NBA draft, not in the first round. Like that, like that's like the best thing that could happen to the Grizzlies right now. Actually, the best thing is that they get lucky in the lottery and get the number one pick and get Zion Williamson, right? But like the best realistic goal is you give your first round pick away this year, which is kind of I get it. I'm for it. I understand it, but it still kind of stinks, but it's where the franchise is. One last thing before I let you go, I'm wrapping up here with David Cobb from The Commercial Appeal. One of the things about a season like this, particularly post-trade deadline, is that veteran pieces are gone. I mentioned the names earlier. And it opens up playing time for guys we haven't seen play much, if at all, usually younger guys. And with the Grizzlies, so far, one of the prominent ones has been Ivan Rabb. Past three games, 19 points, 11 rebounds, 15 points, 9 rebounds, 10 points, 9 rebounds. Is he showing that maybe they hit on a draft pick and he can be part of a rotation going forward?
Absolutely. I mean, his offensive game is so enjoyable to watch. It's just, it's refined, it's pretty, it's smooth. You know, he can finish with either hand. He's just got an array of moves and an improving jumper at that. So offensively, man, that guy, he's there. He is a good big who's, you know, he can even step out and shoot the three, even though he's rarely done it. He's done it in the G League at a consistent level this season. So definitely a piece there. Definitely a dude. Ivan Rabb, the one thing, probably the area I would say to watch him with is, does he have the defensive versatility that's required of fours in today's NBA? Because he's not really quite big enough, I don't think, to be the go-to guy as a five. So if you're going to play him at the four, he needs to have that, you know, ability to switch defensively and stay in front of faster players. So that's the area to watch for him, an area for development. But, man, the rebounding piece that he brings is huge, and the offensive game is real, real nice. He's a guy that could be a guy going forward. And I thought it was funny on Twitter leading up to the deadline. Had some Grizzlies fans lamenting that they were sure that the Grizzlies were going to trade Ivan Rabb for a 2023 second round draft pick or something. but perhaps a good thing, I think, and most people probably agree that the Grizzlies have him going forward. To note as well, he and Jaren Jackson Jr. are really close. They're good friends. So maybe a blossoming front court partnership there.
Let's hope so. That's David Cobb, a Grizzlies beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. You can read him, commercialappeal.com. He's on Twitter, at David W. Cobb. That's at David W. Cobb. Tremendous stuff as always. Thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem.
All right, buddy. David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal on Twitter, at David W. Cobb. When we come back, the Memphis Express played its first game ever in the Alliance of American Football yesterday. It did not go well. They were down in Birmingham. They didn't score a single point, not even one.
No.
Couldn't even get one somehow. Not sure how you'd get one, but, like, if it's possible, they still did not succeed in their quest to get one point in a professional football game. We'll talk about that next. Jeremy and his wife had a home in the Memphis area, but they wanted to move to a better school district for the kids. So they reached out to Josh Hysaw, and Josh went to work with his aggressive marketing strategy. They got that home sold very quickly, had multiple offers, and it sold for the list price in just a matter of days. How did Josh Hysaw do that? He did it with his 45-day guarantee. It's a system for selling homes that creates more demand and gets homes sold faster and for more money than the average agent. The first step is Josh helping you price your home in a way that makes it attractive to buyers. You guys agree on a price, Josh goes to work. And then if your home isn't sold in 45 days at that agreed-upon price, Josh will step in and make the mortgage payments until it sells, or he'll simply buy the home from you. You pick. Totally up to you, and it's a risk-free proposition. Working with Josh doesn't obligate you to anything if he's not doing his job, in your opinion. Even if your opinion is trash, you can fire him, no questions asked. And understand, he has flexible fees. There are no upfront costs. So if you're trying to sell a home, use the guy that I would use if I were trying to sell my home. It's Josh Hysaw. 461-8147, 461-8147. He's on the web. JoshSellsTheMidSouth.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
It feels so good, it should cost. Brought an alligator, I ain't talking Lacoste. Made me say, like a mix of Master P and Rick Ross. She seen to make me always feel like a boss. She said I'm in the wrong.
Now, I was going to say football's over, but it's not. We still got the Alliance of American Football going on. So you're watching football, you're watching basketball all the time. If you're like me, you might do it with a drink every once in a while. If you want to be exactly like me, get one of those. First off, nobody wants to be exactly like me.
That's a tough deal.
Right, that'd be a mistake. You don't want to sign up for that. I do think I have some redeeming qualities. You could be like me in some ways.
Yeah, well.
But in most ways, you don't want to be like me at all. But if you want to be like me in this very specific way, get you one of them big Yeti cups.
Yeah.
The big ones. Same thing I say about going to the liquor store and buying a case of New Amsterdam vodka. Uh-huh. Get a big cup. don't know why everybody's trying to drink out of these little drink, little bitty cups.
No.
Why would you do that?
My wife does the mini cup. Let me explain something to you. I hate the mini cup.
If you get like a gigantic Yeti, like the biggest one they sell, it's going to stay cold, your drink is, and it's you really only have to, you don't have to, you make one drink.
One pour.
One drink, and you don't have to go back, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
So if you want to be exactly like me, get one of the Yeti cups, but then also get a bottle of New Amsterdam Vodka. It's a premium 80-proof vodka made from the finest quality grains, 5 times distilled for unparalleled smoothness, filtered 3 times to create a soft finish. How smooth is it, cowboy?
It's so smooth you can drink it straight.
So smooth you can drink it straight. It really is what I buy when I'm in the liquor store. It's what you should buy when you're in the liquor store. They got flavored vodkas as well. Grapefruit's the newest flavor. Apple, peach, orange, mango, pineapple, red berry, coconut, lemon, raspberry. Try them if you like flavored vodkas. But if not, you got that regular New Amsterdam vodka. It's sitting there waiting for you. Pour your soul out on the web, newamsterdamspirits.com. Jeff Calkins is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. But right now, I got 4 stories I'd like to discuss.
4 stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. 4 notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's 4 Notable Stories at 4:44. Story number one.
So I'll be honest, I haven't paid a lot of attention to the Alliance of American Football leading up to the launch of it this past weekend. Even though it is a CBS Sports property, it's America's most watched network, network of stars. America's most awarded network.
Heard that.
And so I like people.
You guys are involved with this as a company.
Like very much involved with
it. You.
So every once in a while, I'd be up in New York, and somebody'd say, "So is Memphis fired up about the Alliance of American Football?" And I'd say, "I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think there's a subtle crowd. There's some crowd watching it. I was talking to somebody from the commercial appeal, and they said it's some of their most read stories. I don't know what that means.
So
but.
My answer was, I don't know, but we will see. And then Saturday it launches on big CBS.
Did well. Yeah.
Like it beat the NBA heads up in overnight ratings. Like the NBA had 2 big brands on and the Alliance of American Football beat it in overnight ratings, which is a testament to football in general.
And gambling,
Well, it's why this league is launched and why there are a lot of people who think it might work. Yeah. It might not be a great in-stadium experience.
Right.
Like even if you saw the game in Birmingham, like there weren't a whole lot of people there.
No.
But
17,000 I think they got.
But it might do well on television, and from a CBS perspective, I don't want to say it's the only thing you care about, but if you can put compelling live programming on CBS Sports Network and have an audience for it, you know, that is a good thing for the network and for the Memphis franchise as well. So I wasn't that fired up, but after I think it got a lot of attention on Saturday when the overnight ratings came back and it was like, oh, wow, people watch this. And the people were tweeting about it. It had an audience. Mm-hmm. And so I was interested in yesterday to see how the Memphis Express would do in their Alliance of American Football opener. And it didn't go well, Brad.
They suck at football, Gary.
Well,
they really suck. They can't. Their offense is brutal.
I can't argue with you, Brad. They got 0 points. 26-0 loss to the Birmingham Iron. And I know that you can't expect year in and year out, we've learned this for decades, to just be able to go into Birmingham.
You don't
and
just go in.
You just don't go into Birmingham and beat the Birmingham Iron.
No.
I've been saying that for 20 years,
heard
it
that.
Feels like. Yeah. But can you score a point on the Birmingham Iron?
You would
just
think.
Just like one. Can you get 1 point on the Birmingham Iron?
No, you can't.
My God.
No, 0 points.
Turns out it's not great to have Christian Hackenberg as your quarterback. Another thing we probably should have learned a long time ago.
Yeah, you would think.
Like I got a text from a buddy of mine who doesn't really follow Memphis sports, but he's a buddy of mine and knows I live in Memphis, and he texted me yesterday. Today while the game's going on, he's like, "My God, why do you guys down there in Memphis have Christian Hackenberg as your quarterback?" I don't know how that. They didn't consult.
Yeah,
me.
You didn't get the call.
I wasn't consulted.
No,
if they would have
Charlie Ebersol decided not to call Parrish.
If they had asked me and said, "But like, hey, we think about having Christian Hackenberg as a quarterback," I would have said, "Listen. Ultimately, that's your decision."
Right.
But if I remember correctly, his teams are never good.
They suck.
He's never his often like it's never works out for you.
No,
like having Kendrick Lamar do a verse on your new track, like probably a great thing for you. Like
that'll
that's
work.
Probably going to work out. Like getting Drake to do a verse on your track. probably going to work out.
Yeah.
Getting Christian Hackenberg to play quarterback for you, probably not going to work out.
No, like you're going to suck.
Like if Travis Scott brought Drake on and then Kanye brought Drake on, that ain't going to happen anymore.
No.
But like just
Cardi B,
for the purpose of the conversation, like, yeah, Cardi did a track. Yeah. She brought Drake on. I'd say, listen, that's probably a good idea because it seems like every time somebody puts Drake on a track, Black Boy puts Drake on, like it can turn you into something you otherwise wouldn't have been.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence. Travis Scott's biggest hit ever, like, happens to also have Drake on it.
No.
It exposes you to a bigger audience, and then, boom, everybody's in sicko mode. So if you're trying to talk to me about that, I'd be like, yes, you should probably get Drake on your track if you can do that. Yes, you should probably get Cardi B on your track if you could do that. Yes, if Kendrick wants to do a verse on your track, you should probably do that. Christian Hackenberg playing quarterback? No.
No, don't do that.
But the same reasons I say yes to the other stuff, I say no to that. Because every time Drake is on a track, it seems to do well. But every time Christian Hackenberg played quarterback, it seems to not do well. He's the opposite of putting Drake on your track.
Basically.
You're ruining your track if you put Christian Hackenberg on your track. So maybe don't do that anymore. Home opener's next, so... Maybe they just need a little home field advantage. Perhaps that's all the Memphis Express needs. We'll find out soon enough.
Story number two.
Kyler Murray announced earlier today he is fully committed to a life of becoming an NFL quarterback. So that's great news for the NFL draft. I think bad news for the Oakland A's. They invested real money in him, invested a first-round pick in him. And I saw somebody, I think my colleague Tom Finelli, CBS Sports, earlier today, say everything you need to know about Kyler Murray, you should have learned when the A's gave him millions of dollars, but he still wanted to play football for free.
Right.
Like, that's his passion, clearly. Right. Otherwise, you just go play baseball.
Yeah, you take the money.
You just go play baseball. You don't ever go back to college to play a year of college football.
Go do that.
But that's his passion. Yeah. And when people start telling him, yeah, you're a little bitty, but you're a dynamic athlete with a big arm, you can be a first-round draft pick. Well, if your passion's to be a quarterback, then go do that. And he acknowledged, I think really for the first time today, it is my passion, is to play quarterback. I enjoy playing baseball. My passion is playing quarterback. And so even if that weren't true, I think this is the smart thing, because you go get big guaranteed money. You don't have to go play minor league baseball now and disappear from the world. You're going to be presumably the face of a franchise very quickly, maybe even a starting quarterback in week one. And then the thing is about young quarterbacks in the NFL, we know who you are pretty quickly. Like, it won't take 2 years, 3 years to figure out if Kyler Murray is going to be a quality NFL quarterback or not. And if he is, woohoo, he chased his passion and it's worked out. He's a quality quarterback in the NFL. If it doesn't work out, well, that's too bad. But he still got all the guaranteed money that quarterbacks get, first-round picks. And then...
Mm-hmm.
Go be 24 years old, minor league baseball player. You still got plenty of time to be
a professional.
Well, it's different for Tebow because he didn't have options coming out of college the way Kyler Murray had options coming out of college. And also, like, longer for being honest, Kyler Murray is better at both sports than than Tim Tebow ever was at either sport. Even if Tebow has probably exceeded expectations on the diamond so far. So it's a little bit different, but either way, I mean, I think this is what I said 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. Go try to be an NFL quarterback. If you make it, great. If you don't, then go try to be a baseball player. That appears to be what Kyler Murray's going to do.
Story number three.
So the New York Knicks have now removed Kevin Durant from a promo, an advertisement that they were asking season ticket holders to renew season tickets. What they tried to explain is that it was just totally coincidental that they had rotating photos, and this was a game action photo, and it just happened to be Mitchell Robinson standing there with Kevin Durant, but like, get out of my
face. Come on, bro.
It's obviously very intentional, and then they got called on it, and then they said, you know, it was just one of many photos, but they, you know, they're clearly angling for that. They believe.
That's what she said.
Whether they're right or wrong, the New York Knicks believe that Kevin Durant is going to play for them next season. And to put that visual right in front of season ticket holders, I think is a smart, maybe not so subtle, but still smart and somewhat subtle.
Very fun. That's good.
Smart that they put it right. If you got somebody out there who is already a season ticket holder and they're thinking about, do I want to sign up for this crap again? Well, this ain't the year you want to drop off. Like, I get it if 2 years ago you wanted to drop off, four years ago you wanted to drop off, but you've been suffering through this? You're about to suffer through one of the worst seasons in franchise history, and then you're going to let your tickets go before Kevin Durant shows up? before Kyrie Irving shows up, before maybe Zion Williamson shows up. Like, I'm surprised they didn't put Zion in the damn thing.
That's right.
Like, I would have had Kevin, Kyrie. Yes. Like, I would have had three photos rotating.
Yeah, absolutely.
One would be Kevin Durant with Mitchell Robinson. One would be like Zion Williamson standing there with Ty Jerome from Virginia. And another one would be like Kyrie Irving, you know, sort of playing against Kyle Lowry or something. I'd be like, don't forget to renew your ticket. Yeah, so it's smart if you're Knicks. And it doesn't guarantee anything. But reminding potential customers that KD might be playing home games in the Garden next season, I don't think that's dumb, so I didn't have a problem with it.
Story number four.
Anthony Edwards, five-star prospect from Georgia, committed to Georgia earlier today, which means the top two players in the class of 2019, Anthony Edwards and James Wiseman, have now committed to schools with first-year coaches. At Memphis, it's obviously Penny Hardaway. At Georgia, it is Tom Crean. And now there are five schools with first-year coaches who have top 20 recruiting classes in the class of 2019. One is Louisville, the other is Georgia, the other is Memphis, the other is UConn, and another is Xavier. Five programs with first-year coaches who already got top 20 recruiting classes. And I tell you that just to remind you of something I told you all last season, when maybe a different coaching staff was trying to tell you it takes time, you have to be patient. No, it doesn't. You can flip your program with a recruiting class in the first year, the first 12 months in which you have been employed. Penny Hardaway is doing it at Memphis. Tom Crean is doing it at Georgia. Chris Mack is doing it at Louisville. Dan Hurley is doing it at UConn. Travis Steele is doing it at Xavier. Only somebody who can't get the job done tries to tell you to be patient. This commitment from Anthony Edwards to Georgia is just the latest example reminding you that you don't have to be, just have to be good and capable, and you can get it done very quickly. Jeff Calkins up next.